Recording in progress.
I missed your question because the recording in process voice came over it.
It resolved itself. Someone is recording.
Okay. Got it.
Good morning and welcome to the Red Cedar Zen Community's Zen Alive program. I hardly need to introduce Sokaku Kathy Fisher, who is one of our beloved teachers in the Pacific Northwest. Sokaku Kathy Fisher began practicing Zen in 1971 with Sochin Mal Weitzman at the Berkeley Zen Center, and was ordained in 1980 and received Dharma transmission from Sochin Mal Weitzman in 2011. She's also supported us with our last practice period, and we are very grateful that you could make time to speak with us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here and to see you all again. Now, I'll start the chant. Is that right, Chris? Okay. An unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas, having it to see and listen to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Well, good morning, everybody. I have a little group that I meet with where we've been studying the six paramitas and we've been studying a lot of things, but more recently the six paramita. And last Monday night, we arrived at number six, and I put together some notes for them, and I'm going to give those notes another go and maybe add to them. The difference between my talks with that group and my talks with you is that with that group, I speak a couple of sentences and stop for it to be translated into Spanish, and which I can't do myself. So it's English, Spanish. So that means that this may come out kind of choppy. I don't know. We'll see. So the sixth paramita, prajna paramita. It's prajna is translated as wisdom. But I was taking a look at Norman's book, you know, The World Could Be Otherwise, on the paramitas. And he discussed using the word understanding. Wisdom is good, but understanding. And I like that way of thinking of this paramita, because in English, excuse me, wisdom is kind of highfalutin. You know, it's like, oh, surely I could not have wisdom, not me. That's not for me. You know, it's got a kind of a elevated status. And that is not helpful in our study of Buddhism, that kind of otherness. So I think the word understanding is much more for me, it's much more it's closer in. If I understand something, I move closer to it. I move close, it moves close, you know, it's a coming together. I like that sense of the sixth paramita, understanding. And the other part of understanding is love. So I'd like to talk about the sixth paramita today as understanding and love. And to begin, I want to talk about language, the function of language, and understand the importance to us practitioners of the way, the importance of understanding the function of language. Because language traps us, it can trap us in a false narrative. The false narrative of subject and object, of past, present, and future, and such. Excuse me. Just as language is made of words, each with its boundary and territory, each implying its opposite, even emptiness, even the word emptiness implies its opposite. Boundlessness, which tomorrow I go to Upaya for a month, and the language of the Heart Sutra in Upaya is very different from the language in the Zen, in the San Francisco Zen Center tradition. So I move back and forth, and sometimes I get mixed up. But the in Upaya the word boundlessness is used rather than emptiness. But boundlessness also implies its opposite. It's a word. That's what a word does. It's a little container with a boundary. So what I want to say is that human suffering, which is what we're grappling with here, results in our being confined and isolated in our identity, our own identity and others. So understanding the connection between our fixed notion of language in which we think it describes reality as it is, understanding the connection between that and human suffering is really the focus for the Prajnaparamita. We have so many examples in our teaching, of these frameworks of language, this narrative which traps us. We have so many examples of that narrative being blown apart. The one that I'm thinking of a lot these days is most eloquently for me spoken in Sojin Mel Weitzman's words. He was talking about the self. He said, everyone feels that they are the center of the universe. Everyone feels like that. And then he says, and it's true. Everyone is the center of the universe all at the same time. I love that. Because it blows apart our language-born concept of reality. It doesn't make sense to us because we think there can be only one center. You know, like our mechanical model of reality really works for us. A wheel is a circle, and there's only one center, and that's what allows it to roll, and that's how we get around. If a wheel had two centers, I think it would wobble. I don't know how that would work. So we really want our wheel to have one and only one center to work. So that mechanical model is entirely functional for us. It's important. But then, when we take a model like that, we tend to add on to the model. Like, for example, the center is the most important. There's only one center, and it's the most important. And so, then I'm thinking, well, I know I'm not the center, and therefore I'm not that important. You know, that's kind of our narrative. That's part of our narrative. When in fact, each part of the wheel is equally important. There's no part of the wheel you could remove and have and be able to ride your bike. So this language constructed reality that we tend to live in, it's as though we've made a building to live and to work in. And then we've gone inside, locked the door, or even plastered over the door. And then we think the building is the whole of reality. When we think within this mental structure, it's a structure of scarcity. There's only one center. There's only one reality, which, by the way, we forgot that we made ourselves. We invented it. If we go outside and we look up at the sky, the question does not come to mind, I bet. Where's the center of the sky? We don't really think of the sky that way. If we look at the ocean, we don't think, I wonder where the very center of the ocean is. We don't think of the ocean and the sky that way. And we have come to, I think and talk a lot about hierarchy, so don't get me started today, but the sense of human hierarchy really incorporates a value differentiation. So the higher you are in the hierarchy, the more value you have. We have certainly structure and what some people call hierarchy in nature. I don't like to call it hierarchy because it should be crystal clear to us in the midst of this pandemic that the lion is not the king of the forest. It would be impossible for us to make a hierarchy in terms of what's more important than something else in nature. It's so interactive and mysterious, known and unknown, all interdependent. And we kind of know that. We know that through global climate change. We know that through the pandemic, if we didn't know it before. So we have this model that I said, we're all the center of the universe, all at the same time. We have that model right in front of us all the time, the sky and the ocean. So it's not as though it's a obscure and intellectually challenging model. It's just that when we're in our human reality mode, we kind of don't think that way, but we can lift our thinking up and put it in that other place. So and looking at the ocean or the sky or ourselves, we can see, yes, everyone is the center of the universe. Everyone is the center of the universe at the same time because there's no separation. What we share, our non-separation, is exactly the feeling that we are the center of the universe. the self, no self, those terms always pose us, they posed a challenge for us. we don't want to be selfish, right? The self, we think we need to stop being selfish. We need to stop thinking of ourselves all the time, which is a thought born of this scarcity structure. It's our mental construct of self and other. I'm going to stop thinking of myself and think of others instead because it says so in the sutra somehow. But if we if we, you know, blow apart that mental model that we are all the center of the universe, it allows this self, as self arises on each moment, this self to be the center of the universe, just as it is, among centers of the universe all around. And that is no self. It's not an obliteration. It's not an obliteration at all. It's, in Katagiri Roshi's words, total dynamic working. Or sometimes I say, the verb, the self is not a noun, it's a verb. So the other aspect of Prajnaparamita is love. You know, when we think of the Heart Sutra, our first thought might not be how warm and fuzzy it is. In English, it can very easily sound nihilistic. No eyes, no ears, no sight, no sound. It sounds really austere. It sounds bleak. And then it goes through the litany of Buddhist teachings, the five skandhas, the 18 ayatanas, the four noble truths, saying, nope, 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 nope. So it all just sounds like, whoa. But then we must remember, who is speaking the Heart Sutra? It's Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of love and compassion. So then, going back to my language point, if we think of love as an experience, a feeling, a commodity, we won't get much of it, because we have, with our language, placed it in this structure of scarcity. And we're stuck with the question, where's the love? How can I get some? How come I can't feel it? How can I want some so I can give it, you know? Where is it? So in the Heart Sutra, love, and in Buddhist teaching, love is like the ground we walk on. It's the air we breathe. Love itself is like the Earth's gravity, the Earth's atmosphere, the light of the sun. It's already here. It is us. It's the foundation, the everything of life. And love doesn't need us to experience it to be here. You know, there is nothing outside of love. And that is emptiness. No boundary. I look forward to our discussion about this. And so I'll end my talk there, and we'll be really interested to hear what your comments are and your contributions are and your questions. Thank you. May our intention equally penetrate every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it.